Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Rich Hershen. I am here today with my friend, the attorney Peter Meyerson. How are you, Peter?
I am great, Rich, and thank you so much for Gray, Gray, and Gray hosting this from their absolutely spectacularly beautiful offices in wherever we are, Canton?
We are in Canton, Massachusetts, at the worldwide headquarters of Gray, Gray, and Gray.
I like that worldwide headquarters stuff.
So today we have a great guest. His name is Perry Solomon. He's with a company called TechCXO. Welcome to the show, Perry.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about TechCXO. I know you're relatively new there, but tell us what TechCXO does.
Well, thank you again. TechCXO, I joined TechCXO about 2 months ago. And they are an unusual consulting firm. We have about 60 partners, about 100 in staff. We're in 8 cities. And what makes us unusual is all the partners are former C-level executives. About 50% of the partners are former CFOs, chief financial officers. The remaining 50% are split between chief sales officers, chief marketing officers, chief technology officers, chief executive officers, and chief operating officers. So unlike most consulting firms that work in a pyramid, there's a partner and then many staff who go to a job or a project. TechCXO, the partners really do most of the work and bring in staff, of course, when there is work that's related to staff levels and a lower fee opportunity.
So people are really, when they bring in TechCXO, they're bringing in senior level management.
They're bringing in senior level management, and it works in two ways. One is for an interim CFO or an interim CEO, if there's a gap in the company or the company's growing and it's still too small to have a full-time CFO or CSO. And the other is a project. And the projects can be anything from CEO mentoring to doing due diligence for an acquisition. You know, it's kind of any project that's important and has a timeline associated with it.
And how long do the projects typically last?
Well, the interim projects can last a long time because what ends up happening, the TechCXO partners become close with the CEO and the board, and so there's a good relationship, working relationship there. And the interim CEO or interim CFO positions tend to last a year or more. Projects really are based on the project. It can be as short as 5 days. We did due diligence on a troubled asset. We had 5 days for the client to put the bid in, or it could be as long as a year, again, depending on the scope of the project.
What's your background?
Well, my background is, you know, I started working about a million years ago. And I started in
you don't look that old.
Yeah, he looks good I'm for sorry, a million, both, doesn't he?
He was, think of all that experience he brings to the table. Right, I mean, unbelievable.
And thank you, that's very kind. And I started at KPMG, which is a large accounting firm.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
And I was a CPA there, and I went to a small client as a CFO. The CEO got sick, so I took the CEO position, and I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my career. So I've been fortunate enough or privileged enough to run 5 companies as chief executive officer, 2 for Fidelity Capital, which was the venture arm of Fidelity Investment, and the remaining 3 were for venture capital or private equity groups, Berkshire Partners, Charles Bank Partners, Battery Ventures, and HIG.
So they brought you in as CEO.
They brought me in as CEO.
That's interesting. I mean, my experience with TechCXO is really quite positive. I mean, I know one of your partners in New York who did a deal with a client of mine. He didn't really perform the task of CFO or CEO, but it was a really positive experience. A guy named Steve Lacasse.
Yep.
Who was terrific and very smart.
Well, you know, as a newbie here 8 or 10 weeks, it was really the partners that drew me here. I knew somebody professionally for 10 or 15 years who had become a partner, and I met probably, if we have 60 partners, I probably met 12. And that was what made the difference. Really good guys, really committed to their clients, and it's kind of a loose affiliation of senior professionals. We don't have a sales force, and so the partners kind of refer work and sell their own work. And but they're really good guys and really committed to doing a great job on the projects.
So then it's a networking process to find clients.
It is a networking process to find clients. And, you know, it's interesting, having been a CEO for 25 years and having sales forces that are 40 or 50 people, you're always looking to somebody else as to, why aren't you hitting quota? What's so hard about finding clients? Then when you're on the other side of the street and trying to sell jobs, you have all these clients or all these prospects who definitely want to do something, but you can't control any of the timing. I prefer being in control versus not in control.
So, you know, I'm guessing one of the things that makes TechCXO so powerful is that you're a partnership, and among the 60 or so partners, you all complement each other in certain ways and all bring different skill sets so that you can really assemble a pretty powerful team. Tell me, in your experience in the various jobs you had before joining TechCXO, what are some of the unique skills that you bring to the table?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying I have unique skills. But anyway,
we're making that assumption.
Yeah, I know. Because
you survived five CEO
positions.
Yeah, you
learned some things along the way, right?
Well, if we break my experience into three buckets, four of the companies I've led have been growth equity, and so that's high growth companies. Two of those companies, the growth came from acquisitions, and I've done 75 acquisitions, which means I probably did due diligence on 200 companies. And then one of the companies was a company coming out of Chapter 11, so it was a turnaround. So if we just think about those three buckets for a minute, you know, one of the things that are really important in what I'll call lower middle market companies, 10 million in revenue to 200 million in revenue, is making the planning document a living document. And we use a very succinct planning document called the Now Near Far Plan, which is basically three pages. Now is this year, near is next year, far is exit year. And down the left axis is all the disciplines of a company: sales, marketing, operations, product. And we try and in a day or two with the senior management team come out with this three-year plan, convert it to key performance indicators, KPIs, and to an HR staffing plan. And then use that plan in our biweekly management meetings and our quarterly board meetings. And so that tool has really been important in the growth equity companies and the turnaround. In the acquisition companies, I think the most important element is discipline. Because when you have money to spend to buy things, you want to make sure that, again, they're within the parameters of the plan and that both the buyer and the seller will be happy post-deal and that the integration of the company into the buyer's company will have benefits beyond just adding revenue. Because, you know, if you don't have added benefits, then eventually that revenue will slip away from the competitors. So I think post-merger integration is the most important thing for integration companies, and now near-far planning with KPIs and HR planning for 3 years out. But it has to be succinct. It can't be credenza-ware.
I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, what I see, I mean, my practice is in your space, but on a much lower level, but still, you know, relatively significant companies. The problem I see typically is the post-acquisition culture clash. You know, I mean, and how do you deal with that in your companies?
Well, you know, there's two things that you bring up which are very interesting. One is, especially for private companies that may not have raised venture money or private equity money, is are they ready to sell? Because if they're not ready to sell, there'll be resentment and there will definitely be a post-merger crash. The other thing that happens with are they ready to sell? Have they taken a year, usually with an outsider, could be an accountant, could be us, TechCXO, to say, how do I sell? How do I set up my data room? How do I build value? Do I have an organizational chart? How will the buyer take over my business if I'm not going to be there? If you answer those questions, I think you can bring a lot more value in the sale. Going back to the other part of your question, which is how do you avoid a culture clash? I believe integration, post-merger integration, starts before you close the deal. I think that you have to, number one, negotiate an employment agreement and agree upon the former owner's role so that there's no surprises. The other thing, I think there's a language of the buyer. And the language may relate to EBITDA, may relate to KPIs, may relate to things that the selling company didn't have. And if the seller company's management team doesn't want to adopt that language, you're going to have a culture clash, because it is a new culture and it is a new language. And I think, I think having the jobs for the senior team all laid out with employment agreements, I think having this language, and the way that you get the language ingrained in the seller is you do forward-looking budgets. And if that process doesn't work before you buy, don't buy.
So, you know, it comes down to
I mean, that's a great, that's really a great answer. I mean, it really is. And it's you're making it sound like it's, you've got to spend the time.
Right.
The gradual time before the acquisition to kind of make sure that it's going to work afterwards. And I mean, I couldn't agree more with the hopefulness of that process, because I've seen, you know, people, I've got to sell my company today, and I'm going to put it with a broker. And, you know, they find somebody in a month or 2 months, and invariably after the fact, there's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I truly believe selling a company normally is selling your most valuable asset. And if you think about it as your most valuable asset and the potential for multi-generational wealth, you shouldn't be in a rush.
That's right.
You should be prepared. What? Forget about the timeline. You should be prepared. Whether you do that in 6 months or 3 months, you should be prepared.
And I think that's the key. It's the preparation and the planning, and whether you're, you know, doing a merger acquisition deal or, like you said, the now near far plan, it's just planning and thinking about these things ahead of time so you're not in a, you know, distress sale or anything like that. It's the planning. And we see it all too often. I'm sure you both run into it. A lot of companies don't do that. They're just putting out the fires and trying to get through the day and trying to, you know, get the business going. But they don't take a step back to say, all right, let's plan for the next few years here. And I think it's a very powerful tool.
Yeah, the other thing is, you know, rehearsals sound so funny in business. Now, for a basketball team, they practice all the time. And they understand their plays, and the playbook for a football team is so complicated. Rehearsals for a show or a ballet happen all the time. How many management teams do rehearsals before a board meeting? Shouldn't everybody do a rehearsal before a board meeting? Should you prepare? I mean, and it's a sale is the same thing. When you go in front of a seller, shouldn't one of your advisors have questioned you so there's not a new question? You're prepared.
I was a long time ago, I was working for a company. They were a startup company and had aspirations of going public. And the controller I reported to at the time wanted us to fill out all the forms for the SEC and go through the whole pre-IPO thing before we're even ready to go an IPO. And we all looked at him, we're busy doing everything else, a startup company, you're wearing all kinds of hats, like, are you nuts? But it's exactly to your point. It was good advice that he had, good idea.
He just wanted to find out whether you had violated any laws so that you were not able to go forward
perhaps
with the acquisition.
He didn't say he wanted to help with it. He wanted us to do it, though, and he was going to review it.
Yep.
So, well, Perry, thank you so much for joining us. If anyone would like to get a hold of you or text CXO, what is the best way to do that?
Well, I think the best way to do it is techcxo.com is our website. And my email is perry.solomon@techcxo.com. And we would obviously love to hear from you.
Great. Once again, this is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Rich Hershen. I'm here with Peter Meyerson, broadcasting from Gray, Gray & Gray. And we will return after this.